Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to the special pledge drive edition of HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Throughout this episode, we're going to hear a mix of some of the best clips of this past year, as well as some new material. All the while, Program Director Brady Hollick will be telling us about our awesome pledge incentives, so stay tuned. Now, one of the major highlight sections from this past year. In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting about a subject near and dear to my heart, and I'm sure many of yours out there, accessible housing. Our favorite able-bodied observer, Samantha Newmarch, has a background in this, and she's agreed to share her insights. So tell me a little bit about some of the guidelines for accessible housing.
Well, they've recently extended the guidelines for accessible housing, and one of the main features that they are putting into new homes is that they're widening the doorways, making the master bedroom on the main floor, and also ensuring that, you know, most assets of the house will be accessible to people so that they can live in these houses long-term, as opposed to just for a certain period in their life. So what flex housing means is that families will be able to move into a new home and facilitate having the grandparents, parents, and children all living in the same house, which is a huge trend that has been happening over the past, two decades. And even beyond that.
So one of the benefits of that would be certain elderly individuals would be more susceptible to disabilities. So this would be a benefit if they have families to care for them right there.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
and it's really beneficial for the families because they can ensure that the grandparents are getting proper care within the comfort of their own home and being around their family for the extra support that they need emotionally, physically, and mentally.
So, in your opinion, what brought about this trend towards more accessibility?
Well, in accordance with the boomer generation growing old, and because they are such a huge part of our demographic, I feel as though the boom in flex housing has come about because there's such a massive amount of elderly within our society today that we need to facilitate that generation. And by doing that, we've brought in flex housing, and it's growing exponentially.
So do you see this trend continuing with more and more accessibility standards being put in?
Absolutely, I do. And along with flex housing, I also see green building materials being more frequently used.
So, what's society's reaction to all this, generally speaking? Are they in favor of the upgrades, or...?
I would say they are definitely in favor. And it also allows for houses to be resold more quickly because they can facilitate a wider range of demographics.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Now a word from Brady about some of the pledge opportunities for this year's station pledge drive. So Brady, tell us a little bit about some of the pledge incentives.
Well, we have some fantastic pledge incentives this year, Cam. It is more full of an incentive room than ever before. If you pledge just $25, you're going to get incentive room credit for what would be four CDs, or you can get a vinyl LP, or a couple 10-inch vinyl LPs. We also have, for $50, you can get our American Apparel t-shirt. The t-shirts look great this year, fantastic design, as well as a $25 incentive room credit. And for $100, you can get the incentive room credit t-shirt, and you can get a reusable cloth grocery shopping bag, which is actually really fantastic. It's got the headphone logo that we love on there. And we're also doing monthly pledges this year as well. So if you do a $5 monthly, you can get a selected gift certificate and the $50 incentive pack as well. A $10 monthly, you can get a selected gift certificate and as well as the grocery bag and the t-shirt. And for $25 monthly, you can get all of the things we already talked about, as well as an 8-gig really cool keychain that's going to have the CGM logo on there too. So really fantastic.
So how can people go about pledging?
You can go online. Our online is more streamlined than ever as well. If you go to cgm.ca, you just hit donate now. It's literally one or two clicks. We take all forms of credit card this year, as well as Visa debit. You can call in and just give us those numbers if you like as well. Or you can go online. And we also are doing still, I believe, PayPal and almost any form you can think of.
So, coming up next, we have something new from our clip selection. Tell me a little bit about your background with inclusive design.
Oh, good question. So, I've been working with Youth Trevoranos at the Inclusive Design Research Center for over 18 years now. I was originally a student and sort of wandered into the field, and it became increasingly really an important part of what I do and how I think to work on inclusive design. So I've done everything from accessible web design, reviews of Fortune 500 type companies and their accessibility. I'm a self-taught software developer as well, and so I moved into creating accessible websites and applications, and from there into working with the IDRC team of designers and developers to look at the parts of software today that don't take inclusion and accessibility into account, and think about how can we change software at its root to make it more accessible.
So, you recently attended the DEEP conference. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. So, DEEP is a conference that we organize every year. I'm sure Yuta told you a lot about what happened last week. But the idea is to bring together all kinds of people from our community, experts as well as individuals, designers, developers, policy people. And so DEEP this year was quite interesting because we had a focus on many of the issues that I think are increasingly coming up in the news around social networking, Internet of Things, other kinds of technology issues related to privacy, identity, security, these kinds of things that can often be quite worrisome. And so one of the things that I contributed to DEEP was looking at the opportunities within the Internet of Things, big data, social networking, et cetera. What are the opportunities for people with disabilities, and how can we take these really challenging issues around privacy and security and identity management and turn them into new designs, new approaches to thinking about how software and design works?
So what sorts of developments do you think are forthcoming for people with disabilities?
Well, one of my real interests is in looking at how the relationship between creator or developer of software and user of software works. And even that term user, I think, is troubling. You know, increasingly we're spending large parts of our day using social networking and other kinds of software. These become spaces we inhabit, places we live in to a greater extent. And when you think about the physical world, there are things we can do in our environment. Think of the place you feel most comfortable. Maybe it's your living room, your studio, you know, your someplace in your house. And think of the kinds of powers you have within that space. You can rearrange it. You can add new objects to it. You can reorganize and say, well, you know, this bookshelf's getting a bit crazy. I'll get a new one and take the opportunity to change the layout of my bookshelf. And you know, I've got a friend coming over, perhaps, and they need a little bit more space, so I'll push the chair out of the way, switch things around a little bit. This ability in our physical environment, in the physical spaces we inhabit, to change them, to personalize them, and to reconfigure them is so easy. I mean, we all laugh at the idea of a bookshelf that we bought at IKEA that told us how we can organize our books. Oh, you can only do that alphabetically. Or an interior designer who designed our living room and then said, but now you can't change anything. Nothing can move, right? That's silly in the physical environment. We can change and manipulate things. With software, we're sort of thrust into this position largely of consumers or of users. And we have to take the designs we receive and decide, well, yeah, this works for me or it doesn't. But people with disabilities often need just something little, a little adaptation, a little change to be able to make their digital environment more like their home, more comfortable, more productive, more like a place you'd want to live. And yet today's software architectures, the way software is designed, makes it really hard to be able to change it and move it around like we do in the physical world. So one of the things I really want to see is software that's built with this kind of material quality that you can pick things up and change them around, that you can have tools that make it easier to read things on the screen, make it simpler or more supportive, that support text-to-speech and other environments, built right into the application and the software and the user interface instead of what we have today, which is assistive technologies that often get bolted onto software that was never thought of as being adaptable or flexible or changeable in any way.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
For sure.
We are community and we are campus. CJAM is located in the basement of the CAW Student Center at the University of Windsor, and we have been a part of the campus for over 30 years. We have shows dedicated to groups and organizations around the school. CJAM also continues the learning process, teaching anyone, university student or not, the art of radio for free. Campus students are CJAM. We are CJAM.
Welcome back to the Pledge Drive edition of HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. Earlier in our show, we heard some best-of clips of this past year, but before we get into the next one, here's Brady to tell us a little bit more about the Pledge Drive.
Yeah, definitely. Our Pledge Drive is still going live right now. We're just past the halfway point. If you want to give us a call in Windsor, the number is 519-971-3630, and toll-free in Detroit or anywhere else as well, 1-855-344-2526, and there will be someone there to take your call and help you with your pledge.
And we have an online option as well, don't we?
Yes, definitely. You can go to cjam.ca and the Donate Now tab. You click on that, and it gives you all the different options right there on one page. Just a couple clicks away. You can also go online to Facebook, make donations live on Facebook, and it's fantastic. We're having a lot of fun here.
And coming up next, another of those great clips from this past year.
Just tell me a little bit about your condition.
Got a learning disability.
Of what sort?
It just impacts on how I think about things and how I do things on a day-to-day basis.
Now, you found a creative outlet that's helped you express life with your disability. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, I do photography. It really has helped, because other things I just don't find I really enjoy doing besides this.
So, how has it impacted you overall? Has it had its therapeutic properties? Or?
Oh yeah, every time I go out and shoot, I feel extremely happy anytime like I see the outcome of my pictures.
And how does the community respond to your work?
Everybody loves it. And I'm really happy that people love my work because it gets me motivated and throughout the day, and it makes me want to keep taking pictures.
So, if you could send any one message to those out there with learning disabilities, such as yourself, about the need for them to find expression, what would you say?
I would say, find something you love doing and don't let your disability hold you back, because you just can't let anything like that hold you back in life, because you only live once and you really gotta live it your life to the fullest, and you really gotta take life as it comes, you know?
So, have there been any supports that have helped you in the process of dealing with your own condition?
Absolutely. My mom and dad are always there for me, and they've always told me, like, why don't you go to school for photography? And I always told them, like, I was always worried, like, something was going to happen, but they've always pushed me in this direction. I'm finally following it now.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, something both near and dear to my heart, a segment from our friend Ann Mullen from the University of Windsor.
So our Accessible Built Environment Committee looks at the current infrastructure at the university to identify where there are barriers, and where there are barriers, how we can strategically remove those so that as we move forward, obviously there will be fewer and fewer barriers and a more accessible campus for all. With this, it's a challenge to properly prioritize projects, because the reality is there's just so many items on our current deferred maintenance list that need to be addressed. It's very costly. And how do you pick which items need to be addressed first? So what the committee's been working on for the past year is developing a priority matrix that takes into account a number of variables to help keep the decision-making impartial and choose which projects funding should be allocated to that are in the greatest need of being done. So some of the factors that we've taken into consideration include, is there a barrier right now that prevents somebody from actually being able to access a space? Or will a future barrier develop if an item is not addressed? What are some of the costs that would be involved in this? Is there a health and safety issue currently? So there's a number of factors. But then what we do is we have all of these identified barriers included on a list, and through the priority matrix, we assign a numeric value to each variable. And then from there, we can more objectively determine what needs to be done so that, again, we can allocate that funding. So we're really excited about that, so that we can find a more, as I say, impartial way of determining which projects need to be done and which are the greatest priority. So it's been a bit of a labor of love, but we're moving forward with this and identifying all of those barriers that exist currently.
So, to your knowledge, has any other campus of any other university attempted a matrix such as this?
Not that I'm aware of, but I know there are universities that are doing audits of the campus. So what is a trend that we're seeing is having an external auditor come in who has a lot of expertise about accessibility to identify the barriers across campus and then provide that information to the various universities. As far as I am aware, those items are not then prioritized. They're strictly identified and given to the university so they have that information. So what we're trying to do is then we have a lot of that information about where the barriers exist, but now we need to determine the reality is there's a limited source of funding, how we allocate the funding each year so that the barriers that are the most significant or have the most impact on people, they're being addressed first, and we can move down the list to hopefully have a barrier-free university by 2025.
So in this plan, is there a time frame included, say, take this step in X amount of time?
Well, the goal that we've looked at, we've been discussed, is to have a barrier-free campus by 2025. And that really ties into the AODA's timeline of a barrier-free Ontario by 2025. So we've been trying to go off of that. We're still in the early stages of the priority matrix, so we haven't done enough work to determine how this year's project will flow into next year's project and those sorts of pieces. But, you know, as we move along and we've got something put in place, then we'll have a better understanding of that.
Here's hoping you enjoyed those clips. And now some more about the Pledge Drive.
Yeah, I actually wanted to talk a little bit about your own program, Cam. HandyLink is nationally syndicated. And if you go on to the national radio campus community organization, the NCRA, you can download Cam's show at any time, and it's actually played all over Canada. It's one of the few programs that we offer that is created in-house, and you can hear it all over Canada.
Aw, I'm touched.
Yeah.
Love to hear some more about those pledge incentives.
Yeah, definitely. We still have the $25 incentive room credit. You can get CDs, LPs, and a few other really cool things. We have some old posters and everything. You can also get the T-shirt and the incentive room credit for $50. And then if you do $100, you can get the T-shirt, incentive room credit, as well as the reusable cloth grocery bag. And you can also get $5 monthly, $10 monthly, or $25 monthly packages as well, which are very similar to the $50, $100, and the $20 monthly will get you the 8-gig little USB key that'll have the CJAM logo on there. I'm really tempted to get that myself, actually.
So, how can people go about pledging, once again?
You can go online, cjam.ca. You can also give us a call live. Here we are working basically all hours around here throughout Pledge Drive. So if you're in Windsor, it's 519-971-3630. And if you're in Detroit or out of town, that's 1-855-344-2526. And we just really can use all the support we can get. Every single person who listens to CJAM is a valuable listener to us. And if you want to keep these fantastic programs going that you can't hear anywhere else in Windsor or Detroit, please call in, go online, and donate today.
Thank you for taking the time to be on today.
Oh, yeah, no problem, Cam. I love it.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Michael Bach, who will also be sharing his experiences at the DEEP conference. So tell me a little bit about your experience at the recent DEEP conference.
So, I was able to participate at the conference held in mid-October at OCAD, and participated from my perspective and experience in working with people with intellectual disabilities and our national association, which advocates for the inclusion and full participation of people with intellectual disabilities, including significant intellectual disabilities. And we work across the country as well as internationally on this cause.
So, what did you end up taking away from the conference?
I think one of the main things that I took away from the conference is this, I think the idea that in the Internet of Things, if you will, that we're all trying to figure out how we maneuver in and take advantage of in ways that are liberating and empowering for people, there are, and people, participants shared this at the conference, there are an obvious range of concerns around how our data, our personal data, will be gathered and without our knowledge and simply through participation in that
fear and in that domain, and the kind of concerns and risks that that raises for people who, you know, we want to maintain our private space at the same time that we participate in this public sphere. And the boundaries between the private and the public are becoming more and more and more porous. And so there were concerns raised about how we manage, I think, at this boundary of this possibility. I was bringing the perspective of people with profound intellectual disabilities and some of the implications that the Internet of Things raises for this group.
So, in your time working with individuals with intellectual disabilities, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
I think the moments that have stood out for me are the growing recognition that people with significant intellectual disabilities or cognitive disabilities, and there's a growing group of people with cognitive disabilities given the aging of the population and the very rapid increase in the proportion of people with some form of neurological condition, dementias and otherwise. I think we're getting to a point where people are recognizing that people's participation and full citizenship and their equal recognition, if you will, as being full social and legal persons, doesn't need to rest so much on cognitive capacity as we have assumed for really centuries that it does. And I think that opens up immense possibilities for people. And if we, I think there's going to be a coming debate about how we how as a society we deal with this issue that a growing proportion of us are going to have cognitive limitations in one form or another if we hold out a kind of normative standard of what cognitive ability should be. I think we're at a stage where we're giving up that norm because there are more and more of us who have unique cognitive possibilities, if you will, that depart pretty radically from the norm. So for me, the outstanding success is that the recognition that one's personhood doesn't need to rely on one's cognitive ability. And certainly the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities that was adopted in 2006 and Canada ratified in 2010 recognizes this fact that recognizes this as foundational in international law, that one cannot be discriminated against on the basis of one's cognitive ability, and furthermore, that governments, states, parties have an obligation to ensure people have access to the support they need, regardless of their cognitive limitation, in order to participate fully in society. I think that has some exciting and pretty profound implications when we think about participation in the internet sphere.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. I love episodes like this, folks, bringing together different perspectives on different matters of disability life. I decided to do two segments on DEEP because it was bringing together so many different minds, so many different perspectives, each one under the umbrella of disability life, but each one with a different focus. To me, that says all the pieces of the puzzle have to work together to build a strong community foundation for individuals with disabilities, whether it be technology or just recognizing the needs of a particular type of disability. But working together, all the individuals who are part of this episode have each brought something amazing to the disability community. It's always my great pleasure to say that I'm a part of CJAM and that I know these great people. Working together, folks, is what the Pledge Drive, is what our communities are all about. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.